Okay, so let's begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, February 7th, 2011. First order of business this evening will be to review and approve the minutes from our last meeting on January 18th, 2011. Please take a moment to review those and let me know if they meet with your approval.
Okay, here.
Okay with Drew. I got the thumbs up. Okay, the next order of business then this evening will be the 2011 Summer Capital Project Recommendation. As you know, a number of months ago, I brought you a list of projects that we would like to have completed this summer. I have given you, on the first page of the board report, there are the projects outlined, basically what's going to occur at Churchill. We're just going to be replacing the damaged front entrance doors to the large gym. At Churchill, Franklin, we're planning on doing the replace the flooring along the gym corridor and that front hallway. We have some paving and sidewalk replacement. We also would like to replace the historic entrance on the Bryant side of Franklin, as well as some necessary brick repair work up on the second floor on the north wall of Franklin. We have some paving and sidewalk work planned for Lincoln, and then also, as we talked about implementing an interior building painting schedule, Lincoln is the first up for this year. The other two items on there are alternate A2, which is to replace additional flooring along the gym corridor, and then S1, which was to replace the exterior gym stairway entrance along Lincoln. We received bids on January 20th, 2011. We had 23 bidders participate in the process. The bids range from a low of $551,000 to a high of $929,000. We did receive pricing on the S2 alternate, and we considered that just too excessive at this time. The bids for that particular project ran from about $50,000 to $100,000. So we've declined, at least our recommendation is to put that back in the capital projects list and look at it for another time. Not that much, put it that way. I don't really recall what the exact dollar figure was, but I think they came in between 46 and about 90 grand, so we just decided. Yeah, we were thinking significantly less. And also, just the scope of the project was much greater once we got into it and started to have the architect review. It was much greater than what we had originally anticipated. That's really what drove the greater cost than what we had anticipated. So, we received 23 bids. R.L. Soho was the low bidder. The morning after we opened the bids, the architect received a call saying that R.L. Soho had failed to include the Bryant Street front entrance along at Franklin. And that was in excess of $100,000 at one project, so they requested that we allow them to withdraw their bids, and we did allow them to withdraw their bid. The next lowest bidder was Light Construction, which base bid and alternate A2, total price is $663,237. That is the recommendation that we'll be making to the Finance Committee this evening. And then a little bit further down on page 2, I've just kind of given you a brief summary of the anticipated projects this summer. Again, the 2011 summer capital projects are $663,000 and change. The Headley Courtyard, we're estimating currently at about $190,000, which we'll talk about in terms of our next recommendation for projects for next year. We're estimating Headley repair, the back door by the delivery entrance. There's some roof work, concrete work, just some minor work that our Director of Buildings and Grounds will take care of. We're estimating that at about $25,000. And then in conjunction with the Bryant Street replacement at Franklin, we're estimating the lead abatement project at approximately $20,000. Typically, when we do summer capital projects, we go out to bid for the projects themselves, and then we typically do the abatement projects, whether it be lead or asbestos or whatever the case may be. We typically do that internally. And by internally, I mean we work with another architect that specializes in abatement projects, and they create the documents necessary for us. We're talking about some minor landscaping costs that will need to be incurred next year as a result of the paving and sidewalk replacement, and in professional fees, we estimated about $100,000 at this point in time for next summer's capital projects. So the total that we would look to have committed is just in excess of $1 million for next summer, which is right in the very close neighborhood of where we typically try to budget projects annually, is about $1 million.
How do you, abatement, is that considered a hazmat situation?
Well, it will be, yes. And they'll have to go into full containment to be able to. And what they're, what we're planning on doing is a wholesale replacement of the front entrance. That's been the recommendation, what we look at. 1 second. I have, when we move on to the Hadley capital projects, I have a piece of material that we could show you that we should, that will give you a real good idea of the type of material we're going to use in this in the Hadley project itself.
I thought in the Franklin project.
I'm sorry, did I say Franklin? I meant Franklin. The Franklin project. On the third page of the board report, it shows just how things will happen over the next couple of months. We would look for support from the Finance Committee this evening. We'll be taking it to the board for discussion on February 21st, approval or action by the board on March 7th, and then typically we start a day or two after school concludes. We'll start the construction projects, and as usual, we try to achieve substantial completion by August 15th. Are there any questions?
Have we worked with Light before?
Yes, they did the Hadley addition. Okay. Came in on time and under budget. So it was it came out to be a nice turn of events that Soho, although they omitted including that particular project in their total sort of scope of projects that we're intending to do next summer, but we've worked with Light. They've done just a great, great job. One of the best contractors we've worked with over the past few years.
So they're a general contractor. They may.
They are a general contractor. They will.
Various things.
They have guys that. It's not just like they just subcontract everything out. They do have a crew of people that manage their projects and also do a lot of them, like they did at Hadley. Uh-huh. But they are a general contractor. We'll subcontract some of the work out. Drew?
Why is there? There's a big variance between the.
We notice that every year we do projects. When we did the Hadley addition, I mean, you know, projects, there was probably a $400,000 or $500,000 span. Last year when we did summer projects, and the year before when we had significant projects, there was quite a bit of variation between the highest and lowest bidder. We rely upon our architects to speak to the contractor, the successful bidder, making sure that all of the work that we have projected they complete, making sure that it's included in their scope of work, and we've had those conversations. FGM provided their recommendation to us, and this is the contractor that we would recommend moving forward with.
One other quick question. I think we talked about this before. Including the base bid and the AQ, do we get some economies of scale by grouping the two projects?
I would say we do get economies of scale just because of the size and the scope of the project.
Is the Franklin flooring, is that, that's just regular floor tiles?
It's just regular floor tiles.
Not asbestos container?
No, it's not asbestos. It runs along the north south side of the gyms, and then once we got into the project, we also realized that we should probably from the front door area there, actually the side door on the south end of Franklin, up to this hallway here. We're intending to replace all that tile in that area.
That hallway was built about 10 years ago. So, right? That's,
yeah.
That was part of the additions.
I believe it is.
So you wouldn't have used old materials.
No.
I would hope 10 years ago.
No, for some reason, that floor is just really taking a beating.
Yeah, it's
chipped,
it's
cracked. The tiles kind of pull apart, and there's large spaces in there.
There's outdoor. There's doors that lead to the outside,
yes.
that let, you know, you got moisture coming.
That's
right,
correct.
Yeah.
And Ed has had his guy, Ed's the director of buildings and grounds, he's had his guys replace the tile there periodically, and it just... We just thought this was the time to take care of that project. And the nice things are the projects that we're bringing for recommendation this year. We've had a lot of work done at Franklin over the past couple of years, and a lot of work done at Lincoln. Next year, those buildings will be pretty much taken care of for the foreseeable future. Okay. Next order of business then this evening, and I just did want to caution the Finance Committee. I'd like to be able to complete these conversations by about 6:30 because we have FGM here with us this evening, and I have a feeling that their presentation is going to take more than just a few minutes. So I'd like to allow them as much time as possible. Mm-hmm. Okay, then this evening, the second order of business is the Hadley Courtyard renovations.
Bob, did you want to move to the... never mind. You don't want to do Hadley and Spalding together.
No.
Sorry.
As you know, I maintain a capital projects list that goes a number of years out. One of the items that has been on the capital projects list for a number of years now has been renovating the Hadley Courtyard. I don't know if any of us or many of us have been over to Hadley, but this has been an eyesore for a number of years. We get people in, they have a great idea. Whatever that idea is, it gets implemented. Then sooner or later, those people filter out of the building and the area falls in disrepair. So what I've tried to do, we have met on several occasions with building staff, with administrators, building staff at Hadley, and we've heard their concerns, their questions, and just what they thought would be the best way to sort of clean this project up, make it economical and environmentally and financially sustainable over a number of years. And this is the plan that has been created. I believe you all have a copy of that drawing in your packet. And as you can see, there are three separate seating areas for kids. We estimate that we'll be able to fit two, probably three classrooms of students out here at a time. We have a lower amphitheater level. We have an area off the north side of the courtyard here, which will be done in paved permeable pavers, as well as right off the library here. Based upon the recommendations that we heard from the groups that we put together, they wanted a little pond or some sort of water activity. This is what the conceptual drawing looks like that we've created. This is going to be created out of permeable pavers. It will allow for the continued, in other words, we won't have to chop down the trees, remove the trees that are in there. We're planning on allowing those to stay, in particular one of the trees, which I discovered from a longtime teacher there, were donated or they were memorialized because of the death of two Hadley kids a number of years ago. And so the thing is, we have a tendency to lose track of those historical significances of things because we turn over in positions where we had a teacher that has 25 or 30 years with the district, and she said, do you know the story behind a couple of those trees? So we were careful not to disturb their systems, and hopefully those will remain in place. Stormwater, one of my favorite issues to talk about here in Glen Ellyn. It looks like we're going to have to do some sort of stormwater work. What we're talking about now is putting some oversized piping in this area here, somewhere between the building and the little pond area, so it's not disturbed that, but we will have to provide for some stormwater. We estimate, our Erickson Engineering estimates, that'll be about 2,000 cubic feet, 3,000 cubic feet of retention. And then we feel as though we'll be set and ready to go. On the second page of our presentation, I've included some preliminary costs to give you an idea of what this might run. Again, I've tried to be as all-inclusive as possible. I have handled the construction cost at about $150,000. Stormwater, I did this report middle of last week. It was $15,000. We're hearing now it might be about $22,000. That's the upper end of the estimate. I've also included professional fees for a total cost of about $190,000 for approximately three classrooms that will accommodate. We can accommodate the space. So what I would like is support for the Finance Committee, as we would like to take this out to bid as soon as possible. We'll be bringing it to the Board of Education for discussion on February 21st, and then we would go out to, then we would bring it back to the Board on March 7th to for action, to allow us to go out to bid. We would then set up a calendar to get this done in a timely fashion so we can make this all happen by the beginning of school, the next school term.
Bob, if I might just add in a little bit of context. When we first talked with you about the Hadley Courtyard and wanting to do a renovation, we were really thinking much smaller and less classroom-based, but just to improve the landscaping, make it more sustainable and attractive. And I think board members pretty unanimously asked us to consider creating something that would have more educational value and that would bring classes out to them. We've had PTA interest over a period of time to create gardens and that sort of thing, and I think we talked to you a little bit about the fact that having gardens out there not only most of the time have to be maintained over the summer when students are not there, but also given the courtyard's surrounding of windows, we also had concerns of allergens and making sure that we didn't create any indoor air quality situations as a result of anything we did in the courtyard. So we went back to the drawing board really to scratch to think about what could we create out there that would offer several different educational environments, could be used as classrooms, it could also used for study. And in meeting, Bob met with the science teachers and the administration at Hadley, and the water feature was really a great thought for creating a classroom where you could look at organic life and be able to do some actual study of science, but also create other environments for students to learn. So the project has really evolved, and I want to give Bob and FGM kudos for going back, talking to the teachers, you know, really taking a little bit more time on this project, and I think it's a far enhanced project that will benefit kids.
And the departments have participated in our conversation were math, literacy, science, and I believe we even had a representative there from the sort of the arts, the theater program. So this is what we've come up with conceptually, and we would like your support as we move this forward through the board for approval.
Out there right now, what's the stormwater situation? Is there a sewer out there?
There is a single stormwater sewer, or single or maybe two stormwater sewers in the middle of that courtyard. What, Ron, one or two?
There's two.
Yeah, two stormwater sewers. And I tried to get this through without having to take it to the village for stormwater, and I was not very successful. I've been told I won't be successful in that approach.
But we're replacing everything with permeable filters.
I have been through this, and I am frustrated.
Any liability issues with the pond in the courtyard?
You mean in terms of like a drowning?
Yeah.
Well, there's always liability whenever you have something where a student could have an accident, but the climbing walls, you know, create a liability.
As if there's something on the doors leading into it. I mean, they're normally locked and things like that.
So these would be escorted classes.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of reminds me of the conversation we had at the community visioning project when they were talking about bringing the external into the internal mm-hmm. classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get there when school's not in session on the weekend.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Some of the places on Franklin, you can kind of sneak away on the courtyard.
Yeah. Kids try to get in a row.
Yeah.
There's building to the north here.
This is an interior courtyard.
Completely enclosed, yeah.
Surrounded by two- and three-story buildings.
I'm trying to visualize what's happening on the reading terrace here with these various lights.
Where the sunlight's coming in.
Right here?
Yeah, what do we got going on? I mean, what is that, just flat?
Everything is grass and weeds out there now.
Yeah, no, I mean, but...
What's coming in, standing out?
What's conceptual here? Yeah, what are those...
The vertical.
It's just a design out there and access.
The horizontal pieces, I think, are ledges?
No, currently they're just different color accents.
Oh, okay.
Flat accents building features.
What kind of? Oh, sorry.
Sorry, what's the difference between the green and the hatched green sections here?
The green would just be regular lawn. The hatched would be more planting areas where you have flowers or whatever kind of foliage you determine is appropriate for the area.
Outside normal lawn maintenance, what kind of recurring costs might there be, and when would they start in after, you know, how many years?
I would maintain this on an ongoing basis. The only annual cost will probably be for us to get a company to come in and drain this pond and winterize it for us. Other than that, I don't, you know, grass cutting, shrub trimming, and so forth, I don't envision any ongoing cost except for some minor work that's done annually.
What do we do currently in that to maintain it?
No.
Just kind of.
I planted grass out there twice in 4 years, and
it doesn't grow.
We've had a problem with it.
So it's weed whacker, right? I mean,
it's, yeah. Yeah.
Are there any grants or anything to explore for this?
Well, the only grant we had at one point been offered was through the state of Illinois and was through Sandy Pijos, where they had, we had submitted a grant. It was worth about $50,000, but it does not look as though that grant will be funded. Currently, we do not have an alternate funding source for it.
Because I know, like, the Home Depot folks came in at Ben Franklin.
Right.
I didn't know. Obviously, it's a little more professionally
those
done here.
Those were parents.
Yeah, they were already there.
Yeah, I think we had some parents employed by Home Depot or however that worked.
That
was a great project.
Well, and once this becomes a reality, there's nothing that would preclude us from looking at possible grants out there or, you know, donations or something like that. Bob, did you, at one point you talked about the possibility of spreading this over 2 fiscal years, if we use some of our current fiscal year to...
Included in your board packets was an analysis of the, reconciliation of... the Hadley addition, as well as summer capital projects. We've underspent significantly. I think about $180,000 is left from those two projects that we did not spend this year. If financing becomes an issue, we can try to split the work between two different fiscal years.
In terms of the one-time cost, I'm looking at it more over 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, to say, okay, it's $190K, but really it's $19K a year for...
I think the water is probably the...
I think that's really about the
pond is probably the greatest.
On an ongoing basis.
I mean, we're going to have to spend $180,000 to build this out. Is there commitment from the faculty that this space will be used?
They were involved with Bob in those meetings and were very, very enthusiastic about the possibility of being able to use those spaces. And just as an example, we have one of our science teachers. I'm sure Ed would be thrilled to know that instead of the way she has set up an ecosystem now, that she'd have an outdoor ecosystem. She has an ecosystem in her room that she uses a small wading pool to create. So I think the science teachers in particular, to have the water feature, would be thrilled.
They were. I received enthusiastic endorsement on this project. They were pretty taken back just by the magnitude of this. They were all very happy.
Well, and part of the science curriculum, too, is this inquiry-based. Mm-hmm. And so I know, at least from my son's experience in seventh grade, what his science teacher does is bring them out into the courtyard as it is now, and she uses it 2 or 3 times with particular units where they're talking about prey and predator, and she sets up a prey-predator activity where they have to go around and look for worms and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think they're trying to use it, and I know that I ran into a science teacher and had a few minutes, and we were talking about this, and I said, what would your ideas be, and please make sure that you give them. So I think mainly for the science teachers, but in terms of that hands-on. But I think that the other thing we talked about is how do we, in a building that's really stretched for space, utilize, obviously underutilized space. And I'm thinking that this is maybe space that could be used April, depending on the weather.
April, May, June.
And then September, October.
August, when we come back, August, September, October. As long as the weather holds out.
Right. Right. Similar to like TV designing, you can go outside up until a particular time. But So you said something at the beginning, Bob, that we had talked about earlier, which was over time, when particular PTAs got interested in this, took it on, or parents or whatever, when they graduate on, you know, I really see this. This is a district property. Mm-hmm. And so it's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to figure out how we can best utilize this and let our teachers use it as a resource with the expectation that as they use it, they, you know, will be having extra classroom space.
I anticipate this being taken care of by the B&G Department Building and Grounds. I'm not going to rely upon parent groups or staff or anything else.
Property.
It's our property. We should do something nice with the interior and then maintain it on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, it's pretty low maintenance. The way
I don't see much ongoing maintenance, sir.
Okay. I know that you had showed us pictures just really quickly of problems with the foundation. There was
Well, we've had ongoing issues with indoor air quality on that lower level.
Right. So the paver bricks will also deal with some of where you mm-hmm. showed us there was breakdown in the brick and those corner areas.
It's retaining water, so it'll drain the water rather than
retain. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Then the next order of business this evening. It's a 2011 request for proposal for electric services. We went out to bid, and the bids were received back here on January 13th. We had four vendors, five companies bid on the electric services for March 21st, 2011 through December 31st, 2013. The low bidder was Entegris at 0.05333, that's priced per kilowatt hour, and that's the recommendation that we move forward with at this time, that we accept the low bid from Entegris for electric services for the period of time I've indicated. Just to give you a heads up, there's a little short timeline on this, because the sooner I can lock into a price, the better it'll be. So I'm asking that the Finance Committee support this recommendation. We'll be taking it to the board for just discussion this evening, and then we would look for action on February 21st. We deal with the Illinois Energy Consortium, IEC, which is an organization that sponsored by the Illinois Association of School Business Officials, school boards, and so forth. As it turns out, they had the highest bid this particular year. Last year they won it. This year they ended up being the highest in the bid.
Have rates come down in last year? I mean,
yes, they have.
The IEC probably locked in 3 or 4 years at a certain rate that was good last year, and now the other bidders can come in for the year.
We're about 0.012 cheaper per kilowatt hour over it was. So 15% savings.
But this is a strict commodity. I mean, there's no difference in the electricity we get from any of these. Price should be the only.
It's all the same.
Okay.
It's all the same.
And that's another reason for trying to expedite this just a little bit, to make sure that the prices could change between now
right.
and the time the board
takes
action.
They're
locked. You know, I had made a note on this in our last board stuff. Bob, is there any reason, if the Finance Committee agrees with this, that we couldn't expedite this and just move this up?
Well, we've moved it to discussion.
Yeah.
It is on the board. If
right.
If this group,
today,
if this group feels comfortable with
it.
Yeah.
So not that that would make a big difference.
Yeah, other than it's an agenda issue at this point.
Yeah. We don't have it for action on the agenda. Yeah. And that makes me a little uncomfortable to do it that quickly.
So I've spoken with our representative with Entegris. We'll be monitoring it daily just to make sure that we can maintain this pricing. If anything substantially changes, I'll bring it back to your attention when we bring it to the board for action on February 21st.
So this is about a 2.5 year length.
Yeah, I think it's 30 some odd months.
Okay. Is that different than what we normally do? Or?
Well, for years we did not go out to bid for this for at least 2 or 3 years prior. So last year we had not gone out to bid. And I'll be honest with you, I had sort of fits over trying to get these vendors just to line up, maintain their pricing. It was a bit of a struggle. So I said, you know what, this year I'm going to lock it in for a couple of years. And this was the best rate, which is a nice savings over what we're currently paying.
Bob, it's 6:30. I want to respond. second quarter?
I can defer it. It's available for the board's, for the finance committee's review. If you would like me to, I've presented this now.
No, there's no surprises.
There are no surprises. There are no surprises, and if, you know, if the finance committee would like, we could probably include this in a Thursday letter or something, something along those lines.
Yeah, and then if we have questions, let's talk about it at the next.
You could. Okay.
Time at the next finance.
Okay, I'll put this in the Thursday letter.
And then if you have any questions, you can always email me or give me a call, and I'll be happy to address them at that time. So then this evening, the final order of business then is the master facility plan draft recommendation. I'll leave that in Ann's hands as well as FGM Architects. So thank you. Oh, and you know, one other thing. Sorry, I had to tell this morning about this. This is the material that we plan on using for the front entranceway at Frank. It's built for long-term use, no maintenance. It's, I don't know, Linda, what'd you say, 25, 30 years minimum?
Oh, yeah,
wear out of this?
It's a composite.
It is
anti-mildew.
Anti-everything. And it's built. And it's created for long-term use, and we our plans are to maintain the historical significance of that entrance. Okay?
Which is Roddy.
Okay.
Polymer stone.
Okay. Okay. Well, shall we begin with? We can't do the whole report until we talk about Spalding. So let's start with Spalding.
Okay. I'll briefly give a introduction real quickly.
Remember Ron?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, hey, Ron. I'm sorry, I didn't even think. You're an old friend. Why would we need to give an introduction?
Good
practice.
We've been meeting, FGM has been meeting with district administrative staff for the last 4 or 5 weeks or so to develop some new options for the Spalding site. Basically, a four-section K-5 facility on the Spalding site. And over the last several weeks, we've looked at a handful of different options with single-story and multi-story. And in fact, we've actually developed a two- and three-story options in these plans. And after, like I said, a handful of meetings, not many, but a handful of meetings, we sort of locked in on what's called Scheme D1. And that's what we're going to present to you tonight. But this particular book has a lot of the data that we developed over the last 4 to 6 weeks. And this is really for you to take home with you and look at and study. It gives, and I see Steve has kind of locked in on the comparables there. That's some good data on comparing your existing conditions with mobiles, without mobiles, to the Spalding concepts that we've developed. So anyway, like I said, there's a lot of data in this book. And it really encapsulates everything that we've talked about over the last 4 to 6 weeks. Other than that, I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Augie, and he'll walk you through the D1 scheme, the D1 options. And I'm going to be flogged for that. And he'll walk you through that and explain to you how we came up with that particular solution.
Well, like Ron said, we went back to the master plan. We used the program that we kind of developed during the master plan with the community. We get an ideal program, and we use that program for this exercise. A four-section school, looking at a grade level, you know, contained unit with its all its four integrated resources. So the first thing we wanted to do, obviously, was we checked into the zoning of the neighborhood, and I guess to get everybody oriented, you know, there's First Avenue, Second Avenue, Forest Park, north is up, of course, and there's the Village Park located there, and then your 4.73 acres are located right here with the red box. And we took a look at the zoning data to determine, you know, what the setbacks were, any requirements, had parking requirements for school, et cetera, so that we could use that data. So what you see up there as highlights is the front yard setbacks 30 feet, side yard 20, rear yard 25, and for this square footage, and this use could be about 116 spaces that would be required by zoning, which works fairly well for the school district's actually. That you probably can look at the comparisons. It's probably a good number. And in here, at this site, it would be required probably to get that parking off the street, because we don't have sidewalks and parking on the street in this particular area of the school district. So we took all of that into consideration here, and we also made the assumption that we were going to look at these options in the respect that you wouldn't be looking for a variance, that we were going to follow all the rules, and you would do everything on your own property, not on anyone else's property. Mm-hmm. So we made those assumptions to show you what your property could handle, and I think that was the original question. So that is the zoning data which you have in your packet. We also took the time to take a look at, little known to most people, the state does have guidelines of acreage for various school districts. And I want to stress that is just a guideline. There's no code, there's nothing that says you have to do anything. It is a guideline. And they publish those things, and actually their guidelines are quite old. They've been around for a long time. They haven't updated them, but nonetheless, the state does have guidelines, so if you called them up and said, what are your guidelines, this is what they would send you. It might be on video, but they have them. And in this case, their state guidelines say 5 acres plus 1 acre per 100 students for an elementary school, which in your case would be approximately... you did that math, Brown, you said it's about 11 acres, right? We also took a look at the state guidelines for a middle school site, which is 20 acres plus 1 acre for 100 students, per 100 students. And we compared that to Hadley, just so you could get an idea of that. And this, all of this information is in that matrix, which is in the first
page 1 of 20.
Couple pages of that booklet we gave you. We've given you this complete matrix. It shows all of your properties and the percentage of school footprint to the site. And we've kind of put up here on this slide, I know maybe it might be hard to see, but the one that's closest to Spalding in terms of site utilization is actually Forest Glen. So it'll give you some idea of the footprint of a building on a piece of property that we're looking at here is approximately the same. And you're going to see when we show you, we've got some floor plans, and you'll see that. But just so you can get a frame of reference, we've also taken a look at, what we always look at, where the prevailing winds are, where the high points of the site are and the low points. You'll see here, you probably already know, we've talked about this before ourselves with you, but also you've lived here for a long time and you know that this is a village park, but it also sits in a floodplain. And so there's actually a waterway that kind of comes through here and a kind of a drop in here, and that's really the low point. So your site is really kind of moving across this way. I think we have some of that diagram for you. There's the water and how it kind of flows off the site. And so we took a look at all those things. Not that they make a lot of difference in what we're going to show you, but it's kind of an order of magnitude for us to kind of work through these kinds of things and everything, because sometimes it doesn't matter. You mentioned detention earlier. The other assumption we made here is that we would do underground detention because literally wouldn't work any other way in a small piece of property. So we've made that assumption. So we haven't done an exhaustive study at how much we might need for that, where we would put it, but there's space enough to do underground storage here.
Are your contours 1 foot intervals on these drawings?
Yeah, they're 1 foot.
They're
1 foot.
Okay.
It's a pretty flat site, but nonetheless, there is no such thing as perfectly flat. Everything tends to slope, even though it may not always be visual to the eye. And water tends to go in the direction it always has gone. Doesn't matter what you do. It's not a whole lot that you can do to change water. So we always like to know where it's going and where it's been. So so what you see there is option D. As Ron said, we looked at a number of options, and these seem to make the most sense in terms of the things we look at, three stories and one story. And you know, obviously, sure. Obviously, the one story took up a lot more space. The three story didn't really give you the benefits that you might think it would in terms of saving green space, because it really is only, you know, the only thing you can stack are the classrooms. So all you would really get in a three story, and probably see it in there, is one of these wings with one of these little bars would be on top of the others, and you really wouldn't buy back much. And then you'd have a school that would function kind of odd with three stories in a small school like this. So we kind of dismissed it, but we did it because it's an option that you probably, someone might ask, you know, well, what about three stories? The one that made the most sense to us in the team, the administration, was D, because what we were really trying to do is say how would it work the best. As I said, we made the assumption that 116 cars would be within the setbacks of the property. That red box, the heavy line, is our setback lines. So we kept everything inside of there except for the drop-offs that we provided. And the way this works is that you see these buses and we go across here. There are 10 buses. Those are really the, that's bus pickup, not drop off, it's pickup in the afternoon. We assume 10 buses because, again, that would be worst case scenario in a site where you don't have sidewalks or you don't have a lot of ability to walk. We made the assumption that you would provide buses potentially for the entire student population here. Probably that won't happen, but we looked for parking so that you could pull 10 buses up here in the evening. And then we provided a bus drop-off outside the property line because we assumed that in the AM that this could be gated off and it could be a gathering place outside for kids in the morning, because buses in the morning don't line up. They kind of pull up, drop off and leave. So we wanted to separate that traffic, and we created a car drop off on the other side. So kids could get out of cars and walk to this, what could become a hardscape playground area or plaza, or get off a bus and walk there. But in the evening, they could exit the classrooms out to this plaza and get on their buses, and those buses could all leave at the same time after the students had loaded. So we kind of thought through some of the circulation, because really space is a premium here, and it all has to be worked out and thought through. So the main entry to this school is located here. The yellow represents where the administration is. The red area here up front is the cafeteria, which can be sized for two lunch periods or three lunch periods. There's room to do either. I know we've looked at that both ways in the plan. There's a gymnasium here. Music and art are located here, a library. It's kind of a long student street, and then these are the classroom wings. And so that would be kindergarten, first grade, second grade. And then on the second floor, you have third grade, fourth grade, and fifth grade stacked on top of one another. Most efficient way, pretty straightforward. They all can work as units, as we talked about when we did our community master plan. On the site itself, as I said before, we made the assumption that all things would be on the James Oil red box. So there you see playgrounds, which are comparable in size to the matrix, you know, that you kind of have standard throughout the district. There's a small little, we kind of showed you for space, there's a green space in the corner.
small bowl diamond for elementary school. It's not really regulation Little League or anything like that, but could easily be, you know, kids could come out here. We also checked for you. It's about a 4-minute walk from here to Ackerman Park. If you go to the Prairie Path and you could create some walkways through here. I don't know if we may have, we don't have that slide, but did we include it?
You mean the Great Western Trail?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I call it the Prairie Path. But yes, there's a, you know where I'm talking about. There's down here and this road. We kind of calculated it's about a 4-minute walk, so that if you thought that there were some bigger functions that you needed to have in the playing fields, somebody might ask you about that, and you stop. That's about how far it is. But you would have to provide, probably if you were going to walk kids over there, you'd have to provide sidewalks, you'd have to get a link through there, you'd have to dedicate some space. But those are all possible things to consider, so we wanted to point it out to you. We've kind of gone ahead and tried to show you a three-dimensional look at what this thing might look like. We tried to lock in the houses. None of these are exactly the houses. They're sort of Monopoly-type houses, but how tall they are, so that you can begin to see, you know, things like the gymnasium and a two-story classroom building is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 feet high. Most of these houses are going to be 30 feet maybe at the ridge line of a two-story. They're not going to, you know, but it seems fairly comfortable. I mean, it's not unusual to find a school sitting among houses like this in a community-based school district where kids go, you know, kind of have schools near their homes.
This is 15 and 24. It's 15 and 24.
Yeah. And we did some low level shots, so I realize that these are somewhat a little bit primitive, but to give you an idea, there's the houses across the street, and you sort of see that yellow box, I mean green box, is the gymnasium, kind of the height that might be on the street level. So, and there's your classroom pieces. So, I'm sure I forgot something, but I'll let you ask questions. I try to cover most of it.
Did we sink any borings at this site in the past, you know?
They did back in 2005. Take soil samples. And the homes across the street.
I think that's what caused a lot of problems.
They did it with the homes across the street.
Yeah, somebody just went in some of their front yards and took soil borings.
Yeah.
But all the mechanical would be in a basement? I mean, do we know, can we put a basement in this area?
No, we were assuming that it would. We created some mechanical spaces in the floor plan. I know it's hard to see, but some of these areas, the gray areas there, are mechanical rooms.
I thought they were marked TLT.
Well, there's some toilet. Some are toilets and some are mechanical.
Okay.
What's the swing space?
That's the,
those are some extra classrooms that we've provided, kind of one in between each house to take care of any bubble that you might
level.
Have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of the program that we looked at when we did a number of options at your other schools that you remember.
Yeah.
We kind of tried to use the same decisions or direction that was given at that time. So.
So the cafeteria, I assume, is more a multi-purpose space, not
yes,
very lunch.
Yes, the cafeteria that we put in there would have a stage in it. We provided for a stage. It's not a full kitchen. It's a warming kitchen, so that you can warm some food and have a little serving line, very much like you're doing in your other schools. So the square footage there is to add stage to the cafeteria, so it could also be a performance space for elementary school.
But it would allow us, the warming kitchens would allow us to have a hot lunch program. They're large enough to...
If you're, it would be a large enough to...
Not to make, to be a satellite.
Yes, to be a satellite. Yeah, I want to be careful about that.
Yeah, not a cooking.
You're not going to prepare the meals there, but it would be large enough for
to serve.
Food to could be brought there even, warm, and then served.
Right.
So, yes.
I just wanted to clarify, it's a little different than what we currently have.
Yeah, this could be more, so we made a little bit bigger because give you that option in the future to do more if you want.
How many buses go to the existing elementary schools in each one?
Churchill has a large number of buses. I think they have 6 or 7 right now, plus the many buses that arrive on property, the pre-K program and the special ed program and the daycare program.
The Y
and the Park District.
But here, every student would be eligible for busing because there's no sidewalks. Bless you.
Oh, yeah, and that Nifkin, I mean, it says Village Park, but that's a Glen Ellen Park District park. And this is all unincorporated DuPage County, I'm assuming, under the Village of Glen Ellen's zoning auspices, or is it the county's auspices?
It's the county.
Okay.
But you're right, that should be labeled differently. It is a part of Glen Ellen Park
District. On the first couple of pages, that kind of comparison matrix, the all-purpose rooms that you're identifying on this option, is that which
what
rooms
page
are those?
Are you on them?
Page 2. They're gymnasiums. So the gym is roughly about the same size as Churchill's, a little bit bigger. But the all-purpose rooms, which rooms are those on the drawings? Is that cafeteria or the something different?
No, I think it's probably the cafeteria.
And then there's two. You know, there's kind of two numbers on here. There's 3,700 and 4,600. I'm just wondering what the... And it says teaching station, so I'm just trying to picture which rooms these are.
Well, these are the gymnasiums.
They are, okay.
We call them all-purpose rooms because we use them. Sometimes you use them for more than...
Okay.
You see the title to the left of that all-purpose room? Because we've separated out the lunch room is actually the next box down.
And when you say ideal, that means state guidelines. State guidelines.
That question on the outside of the building, just a curiosity question, because we have this issue certainly in our family, because it's the neighborhood in Lincoln. Are there any guidelines around bus exhaust? And there are state guidelines on the idling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have, well, right now, today, they're supposed to be, if they're in front of the building more than 10 minutes early,
shut up.
They're supposed to turn off the engine, and then they can turn back on. That was a couple years ago.
So if we needed, the Glen Ellen police wouldn't oversee any of this. We'd have to call the sheriff to come
yes.
and do
yes,
anything.
Yes, DuPage County Sheriff. There's okay. pockets in that neighborhood that
right.
they've been annexed.
Yeah.
They come under the Glen Ellen zoning and Glen Ellen planning, but because this is still unincorporated, it's not been annexed into Glen Ellen, it would probably come under the county.
Do we know, my memory's foggy, from Lattisick, I know, was part of the MFP committee, and I thought I remember us talking about annexation plans of the village. Does anyone remember mm-hmm. what they were projecting in well, this area?
I don't recall any of those conversations. They may have been table conversations.
Yeah,
they
probably were.
I don't think they were formal conversations as part of the...
I don't know. The towns have rights to go into the unincorporated.
Deer Court Glen was the most recent area in this area that was annexed. And that's, it butts right up to the Great Western Trail. And that's how, because it's not really linked to the village, but because the Great Western Trail is there. It's been a while since I've talked to them about the new development, but I venture to say that if there's something out there that they are aware of, they're probably talking with any kind of anybody who's going in there trying to build or buy up multiple parcels, but it's a couple of homes.
Are the homes around? I guess we have sewer to the old Do we have to run sewers to this? The old school had sewers and stuff, I assume.
Yeah, I don't,
all the hookups. Are the homes around there well and septic, or are they on sewers?
They don't seem to be big enough lots, but...
To be, yeah. To be,
oh, okay.
To be on their own well. Good question.
And what year was the other school taken down?
I'd have to check the history on that one.
It was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The school
was
stopped.
Torn down, yeah.
District 41 stopped having classes there in 79 mm-hmm. or 80, right around there.
So I'm just trying to, in my head, I know we talked about this briefly with the other, with our original discussion of MFP, but it's late. The school was empty for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
that
just left. Yeah.
Well, it was used by District 93 for a couple of years. They leased it and bused all their kids there when they were growing
mm-hmm.
very rapidly in the early 80s. And then I think some preschools used it for a while and other things like that. I don't know how long it actually sat empty.
Mm-hmm.
This is fully IR compliant.
Yes, that's the approach we took. If you look really close, you'll see the plan. We actually drew them all in there, right? The cluster with the resource center, the mm-hmm. resource, the teacher support area. It's all in there, just the way we kind of diagrammed it in the master plan. So.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to make sure that, because we wanted to make sure that it worked.
And we
looked at it all different ways, and boy, if you decided to build a building here, we'd probably look at it all again. We were really just trying to do a test fit, there's probably other ways to design a school, but this is a pretty efficient, straightforward way to do it, and it allows for easy construction and kind of compact, but still a nice environment. We have 30 feet between each wing, which is a minimum, but it's a pretty good size width to allow sunlight to get down to the lower levels. So we've tried to take a look at a lot of that, things we discussed with administration, to be given an honest real look at how it works.
The school that was there was 12 classrooms, though, the old school.
It was probably more like a 300-student
school. Yeah, I went to school there.
It was section.
Yeah, it's just like the old wing in Churchill. It was the exact same setup.
Well, I think we did all this study when we went through the community master plan process. A lot of the schools in Glen Ellen were originally designed mm-hmm. at that size, and then they were added to. That one just... because if they stopped using it, it didn't get added to.
Since we're kind of in the process of getting rid of options, what sunk options A, B, and C? I mean, they're pretty much the same layout, just kind of turned.
Sure. Yeah, I think we thought. I think it was more the function. Like I said, I think.
We could use that space more effectively when it was flipped.
We just thought, it really was about site circulation. Mm-hmm. It was adding the buses, making the kids safe. How do we, it seemed like the D option gave us the best combination. But like I said, if we were to move forward and actually design a building here, we'd probably look at all of these things. Mm-hmm. We really didn't have the benefit of really discussing, will we really have 10 buses, how would that really work, what other things would we do. The building, you're right, the building kind of stayed the same, but we were kind of moving it around to see how these things would work. But there's the three-story, you see. It didn't really save a whole lot, but it did allow you to turn it. But it gets very tall when you have a three-story. So
this would be the only
that is isolated as a whole lawn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
How would we provide security?
Well, in terms of like fencing in the play yard or something like that, that's certainly something that could be explored, whether or not you would fence in the play area. If you look at the way it's laid out, I mean, the play area is not, it's probably going to be about, what, close to 3 acres? Not a large piece of land, not even, yeah. So it's like a double backyard on a.
Yeah. And I think you could probably, I mean, probably would take a look at fencing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you probably want to do something. You'd probably get into what kind of fencing is, mm-hmm. because it might, some chain link might mm-hmm. be offensive to some people, but I think it could be successfully done.
Yeah.
It's done a lot. Most schools mm-hmm. like to fence mm-hmm. around their mm-hmm. properties.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of different ways to do it. But most of your schools, I don't think they actually do that. The neighborhood just sort of...
Yeah. Well, and the playground is less accessible to the road. If you think about
yeah.
the other schools, the playgrounds are not... In this case, playground would be more accessible, which is what...
But I think it's all that's possible to mm-hmm. do, and like I said, there's different ways. And we've kind of restricted ourselves to say everything needed to be here. You'd have to ask for permission to go through... lots of process to talk about using other pieces of property or using setbacks. So we didn't do any of that. Those would all be open to you. It only would make this a little bit better if you could start, using other things or, how can we get into the setback. But we, for this process, we didn't want to be assuming we could do things that you're not ready to even ask.
Well, and I think in our initial conversation, we wanted to make sure that if this is what we know we have, this is the existing site, and this is what we know is available to us, without any guarantees that you would have the ability to do setbacks or have an intergovernmental agreement that would allow us to use Park District property, what would a school look like?
Yeah, and we didn't take the time to really evaluate how usable this would mm-hmm. be for the school mm-hmm. because we don't know how often it's wet. It's a floodplain. You have those issues, I think, in some of your other schools, which are not really fun. So promise that, to say this works, okay. is not the right thing to do at the moment. I think mm-hmm. we wanted to say, can it work on the 4.73 acres, and it does. Would you do this if you had more land? Probably not, but it works. It has many, I believe, has many of the issues that you might deal with at some of your other schools already. There'd be a lot of traffic in those streets sometimes when parents are dropping off. Because we know they're not all going to get on the bus. Probably most of them are going to get dropped off. So many of the issues that you face at your other schools will likely be here as well.
Mm-hmm. How many buses go to Forest Glen?
Two.
I mean, that's probably the closest one because less, a lot more children walk. The thing about Forest Glen is all the parking spaces kind of surround the mm-hmm. playground.
Well, we did look at those options, Steve, but again, we decided that would be a situation that you would have to get a variance mm-hmm. for. So we didn't do that. We did look at those. We drew them. You could start to reduce the size of the parking lot, but you'd be surprised that if you're going to meet the 116 that the zoning says, mm-hmm. by the time you try, you can't get them all here and get the buses in a drop-off. So it actually became more efficient to do this because we had a small parking lot and this. We got a little more green space, but you've gone through
this. Usable.
You've jumped through many hoops to get it.
Yeah.
And The other thing we were concerned about was, again, there are no curbs. There's no...
Well, that's my concern, is some wayward vehicle while kids are out at recess. I mean, Forest Glen still has the cars all parked there. I'm thinking things like, you know, you look at Glencrest on 53, where traffic's pretty hard. They have big berms right inside the fences, so even if a vehicle went up, it would hit the berm and stop.
That's probably a good thing to do in your setbacks. You probably the neighbors would prefer that.
It's going to stop those cars too.
Headlights, you know, at least if we got berms up, at least the height of a headlight on a car, you know, in the evening, it would block anything going into it. And it provides that sort of safe feeling even inside, because you're really looking at a green berm that is as a 3 foot tall first grader, it'll feel more secure.
Right.
So I think that's all possible in a setback. That's probably an easy thing to get in a setback. Parking, I think, is a little harder, I think. And so we didn't want to presume that you could get it.
How many kids do we put on a bus right now?
We route for, on our regular routes, we route for like 60 out of 72 passenger bus.
So 600 students.
Basically, that's where the 10 came from. You know, would you ever actually have 10? Well, we don't know.
But we don't know what the census is.
There's probably a trade-off in how many kids per bus stop and how long it takes to stop at each bus stop.
Yeah. But, I mean, the 10s are pretty...
You can see that a lot of buses.
Right. That's not what that's true.
Phyllis, do we know what the census is in this area in terms of kids? But they couldn't walk because we don't have...
Nobody can walk.
I mean, that's just it. That even if they were like just one block away, I mean, there's no way they would be walking in the street to get there, because there are no curbs, there's no gutters. All you have is a culvert.
Yeah.
So conceivably, you'd be a child who lives around the corner from the school is going to have a school bus to go and half block or whatever.
They have the right to ride a bus. They don't have to.
Right.
You still have to plan for it. Or do they sign? Right. Come inside to where I'm never going to ride the bus. Don't plan for it. I mean,
well,
you still have to.
But even though we have the parent, even now today we have parents, how's your child going to get to school? We still route for the eligible. We don't route for the I'll be on the bus.
Right.
Because
that can change.
We have to allow for.
Right.
Yeah. And not that many of our buses are riding empty either. Not all the students are riding on a regular basis, but it's not like we're setting up a lot of empty buses.
Well, in imagine weather, you know, maybe parents allow their kids to walk on the grass of somebody's yard or something, or in the sidewalk on a sunny day that they are on the street, but you know, bad weather.
Yeah, to me, the recurring costs, you know, play a big part in this. I mean, any option, I'm sure we could fit a school on here, but if we start comparing it to the other ones and we're looking at costs to say to add on to a school, if this school requires a lot more transportation every year, you know, how does that factor in instead of just the cost per student to build it?
Yeah, but all the kids attending, well, we don't really know. You wouldn't know it unless you set up boundary areas, but all the kids in this neighborhood are bused right now.
Right.
So there's no additional busing.
You'd be the
student. It depends on where you draw your line.
Well, that's why I'd want to see a geocoded map to say you're not going to fill the school with just students riding buses to other schools. To efficiently run the school, would you have to take students who currently walk to Forest Glen and bus them north of By the Corner?
Most likely you would be taking students who are potentially walkers at other schools and transporting them.
Well, we had
kind of and you may be increasing your transportation for your other schools as well, because you have to move your boundaries north.
That, there's just a whole unknown there in terms of recurring costs that is hard to gauge.
Mm-hmm.
It would take further study.
Mm-hmm.
That was the bulk of our conversation with this downside, the operating costs.
Any new building
for that, yeah. But for just the transportation.
Hypothetically, if we purchase the apartment district piece, what could be done with that? With the 1.8 in the the water retention.
I don't think you can't disturb that. You can't do anything really with it in my mind. The only thing it might buy you is for some land up on here, which, you know, playgrounds would be perfectly acceptable. You know, that you would suddenly find your property being a little bit larger. But this part of this property pretty much is not usable, and it's the waterway.
There's wetlands west of Glen Allen Road, and if you've ever seen Glen Allen Road impassable after a heavy raid, all that water's flowing down to the DuPage River.
This is, calling it a park is more, it's really more of something you can look at than it is sort of
like the bog, like around Lincoln, you know.
I'm sure it's pleasant. I'm not, but I don't think it's usable land in terms of seeing, like, second and third graders out there running around and
Glenbard uses that space for practice across field hockey.
Uses Spalding.
Right. South of the plaza area.
Yeah.
Right. But the point is they only use that because they can't. Remember, I've taken Carl over to lacrosse camp, and that whole side in the spring was wet.
Pretty much. I believe that. I mean, this is literally called. It's not. That's not our term. That's the county's term. It's a floodplain. It's below the level.
So it would be good, like all our other schools. We have that area that's usable 10% of the time, and then the rest of the time.
It's not something to count on. You know, there's probably days, probably in the summer, where it's probably not a bad. But it's also got topography there, so it's not like you're going to kick a soccer ball there. It's really more for meandering and you know. There's other things you can do along this edge. This, what you're seeing in this tan color in this aerial, there are playgrounds that are, there's a playground there. And that's sitting right here. If you've been out, you've probably been out there, you know. So it gives you a feel for how big, you know, things are. But so yeah, there's a generally flat area right across here that you can probably use for something. But
one thing to note, and I think the analysis table that that FGM constructed is that percentage of the available land that your building is using, and it's the highest, it would be equal to Forest Glen. So our smallest site, this would mirror our smallest site, use the most space on the space you have available, Lincoln and Franklin, and Churchill having a lower percentage, I think probably in that like 16% or something like that, I think 16 or 18%.
Churchill is 16, Lincoln is 22.
So yeah, our smaller sites take up more of the footprint of the land that we have.
And that's total site, not really usable space.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you for putting this together, because we would have had a difficult time.
It's a very visual and inviting.
So the recommendation being made by the group you have an advanced copy of, which includes Spalding. So I guess, you know, before we could present this to the rest of the board, one of the things that you need to determine, and that's why this was important to have FGM give us some idea of whether or not this is a viable site and remains in your recommendation. So that's really where you are in this conversation at this point.
I was actually kind of surprised how much you can get out of this site.
Yeah.
Obviously, the percentages, like we were talking about, the coverage puts us closer to our smallest site. Although that doesn't include the Park District property. I mean, if the board was to go ahead with that, presumably, you know, the board would try and get a hold of that. And not very useful, but I think that page 13, you know, kind of, you're basically adding some land to that equation that's going to knock that percentage coverage down a little bit, at least take it out of the forest blend.
I mean, if you're staring out the windows of those classrooms, you've got some trees and birds to look at. It's not
pretty.
Like you're looking into a house next door. Mm-hmm. It's not usable for...
Right.
Right.
You might
get a little bit of reading room. Like I said, there's a little bit of flat area up here. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different ways you might... Anything you can get will make it a little better.
But we will be purchasing a quarter or a third of that floodplain space. It would be all of it.
Well,
carve out.
Right. Or developing an intergovernmental agreement or something like that.
Right. If you don't build a building on it, you could put playgrounds on it. And then, you know, the park district see that as, an enhancement for them. And that would be a good agreement. We didn't do that just because we wanted you to see
the real footprint.
Because you could see that the playground that we put on there is larger than the one that's out there. And that's because typically that's the size you've been putting in to your elementary schools, what we're showing there. So you can see it's bigger than the one that's out there.
Right. Out where?
Out on the Park District property, there's a little playground on there.
Oh, yeah.
And the ones you typically put in are larger, and we tried to show you the size of what you typically have been putting in. And you have to keep in mind that at some point, if you have 600 kids, they could be out there all at once. At some point, maybe you're going to stagger them at lunchtime,
fire drill.
So that is a big thing to consider. And like I said, I think there's no question the building will work. It's more a question of the green space, the physical, the parking lot. And anything you can do to make that better would make obviously a better school. The outside. Play areas are as important as the classrooms.
Mm-hmm. It's an environment, a whole environment.
But it does raise the question about, in the recommendations, we have three recommendations. One, which is an elementary on Spalding, the other is an elementary on a larger parcel of land. I don't know if seeing a test fit on Spalding eliminates an elementary on a larger parcel of land because you can fit it on there, or if you still would see that.
No, I think I wouldn't eliminate it. I was kind of interested in tonight's presentation to see if we eliminated Spalding, whether we would eliminate a large parcel K-5.
And does this eliminate Spalding? I mean, is there anything in your thinking that would...
I mean, I keep it. Obviously, there's lots of things to talk about, who's going to go there, et cetera, et cetera, and other things we could do to the site that aren't in these drawings. But I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised that you can actually put a building out here with all the and you're talking about a building that is, in a lot of respects, has more square footage, more almost everything than any of our other facilities. Except for land.
One of the differences, I think, is that when you compare it to Forest Glen is mostly a one story.
Right.
Sprawling, and this is two stories. So you do get
reduced
some benefit in it is obviously a more taller building. As I said, it's going to be 30 feet tall versus 15. But that's partly what's seen there. You're getting it's 23% usage of the property, just same as Forest Glen, but it's on two stories, and you're doing it without having mobiles. And so there's an efficiency in that two-story building on that piece of property. I don't want to fool anybody to tell you that, we're going to sit here and tell you this is ideal. I mean, it's very urban. There's
There are schools that do this. They typically are more urban quality schools. It can be done. It's just you have to recognize that the green space is where the issues are. It's, you know, when I have 600 kids out there, I don't want them in the parking lot.
Right.
What does that look like? You know, so there's a lot of kids out there. Yeah. So you would want to get some relief from that park district land if you could, just because it, you know, be safer probably to have a little more green space for when they're all out,
yeah,
either before school or, you know, at lunchtime or fire drill or whatever.
Well, and as Drew mentioned, from a security standpoint, if you have all those children out there, making sure that they're not accessible to the streets, nor someone's accessible to them from the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Two quick questions. What's the square footage of the building that you're proposing?
This building is about 72,000 square feet. You know, so give or take 70 to 75. You know, we actually. So.
And then what's the back of the envelope? What's the per square foot cost to build it?
That back of the envelope thing is
all. Yeah, I actually don't like that phrase.
We issued the cost.
We did.
The modeling information back in late November.
Right.
That was around.
Yeah.
It was 20. It was 22, 23. So in that neighborhood.
I would say that we're talking about something. Yeah, you know, those numbers that are in there, I think, be honest, I think they're probably high.
Well,
we see the numbers are moving all over the place right now. You know, we build the Geneva schools that some of you visited.
Mm-hmm.
Those were in the neighborhood of about anywhere from $200 to $220 a square foot. But that was back in the. In the days when we didn't have the sort of the recession.
Great recession.
where the prices had actually rolled back to being 2003 prices.
Right.
They're going to climb back up. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it'll take to get back. But, so yeah. They are, I don't think we have those Geneva prices, but mm-hmm. I think your 16 to 20 million is probably not a bad place to be thinking this might be. And that would be everything in. That's not, you know, that's not just the building. That's, I'm
sorry, no, I just wanted to throw the ball up. I'm here to help you out. The placeholder that we had last November was around 95,000 square feet, and the plan we have, the new program we developed with all the integrated resources was 71,000 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So hovering, you know, in the $180-$200 a square foot range should get you there,
mm-hmm.
especially since you don't have site acquisition. You're going to be on the lower end. I mean, everything hinges on utilities, and you mentioned sanitary and the other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't gone that far yet. It's purely conceptual mm-hmm. right now.
And that's purely back of the envelope, too.
Right. You have an envelope. Write that down.
Yeah. That microphone.
Make it clear. No.
And I understand.
And any cost estimates you have to put in context of solving the problem we have. And this doesn't eliminate junior high portables.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's only a part of the solution.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just a part of it.
Which building a new junior high is only part of the solution.
Right.
So no matter how you look at the whole program involves both elementary adjustments and junior high.
So if I understand this correctly, if you go to page 7 of our draft, what the Finance Committee has presented to the board is this B7, which is purchase a larger...
It begins on B4.
B4, which is on page 6. So new facility on Spalding, which we just reviewed. B7, purchase a larger parcel of land, then Spalding that can house a new elementary, and be a larger parcel to build a new junior high and raise it Hadley to be elementary. Those are the three that you're standing at this point.
That's
right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Do we want to include this document in our references?
Sure. I think I did. I think I put Hadley, or maybe Spalding, test fit drawings for an elementary school at Spalding. Mm-hmm. I did add to our references.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just one thing then when we finalize it. If you guys could, on page 2, Just repeat the first row.
Second?
Just repeat the first row of school names on that table on page two.
Oh.
So you can keep your columns.
Oh, in here.
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
I thought you were on the
sorry, document, yeah, so. In here. Just get the column, the titles
where
of the headers
Lincoln
of the
Churchill.
Column repeated on that page.
So it says Lincoln Churchill Franklin Ford.
Yeah, repeat that on page two. Yeah.
Oh, I get it now. Okay.
Yeah.
It's your correction, not mine.
Yeah.
I was looking at you, but
I know. I'm thinking, I don't know on page two of this document.
And then the date thing. Yeah.
And the date. And we have this. We have copies of this for the whole board, so the draft is there for the whole board. I'm sorry.
Page one,
uh-huh.
History.
Mm-hmm.
District Mounted Lincoln Series.
Oh, yeah. Good. Thank you.
What's that?
Mounted on page one of eight under history.
On the draft.
Yeah, the typo. Well, I would suggest, like we did last time, the document is on Board Docs. If you have edits, either
yeah.
better I can send it to you in a Word file to make changes.
You could, yeah, I'll do some strike through.
I went through it yesterday. I think it's a very well-written
document. Notice we made a few changes to make the options go against the recommendations, so it's a little more readable, hopefully.
Thank you. Well, thank you, committee, for calling this down and for Ian and Bob and Phyllis work on it. So our
finance committee did the work. We just
well, we're our next step is next meeting to present the final report to the board.
On the 21st.
Mm-hmm. 21st, right. And I think we're going to talk a little bit in today's meeting during board reports about what shape the board wants that to be in. Whether, you know, we'll just provide, we're talking about providing the document in the Thursday packet, mm-hmm. and then we just need to know what we want during the meeting, if anything, what mm-hmm. kind of discussion do we want to have around it.
Yeah, and what homework you want
right.
to do.
And if we want it to be, I don't think we're at the point yet where the board's going to go, okay, great, now let's decide what we're going to do next. I think the first thing is probably just a discussion about the report, any questions that the whole board has,
mm-hmm.
kick it back for revisions.
There you go.
Or not.
This could last through April 5th.
Yeah, right. But so we'll talk about that a little bit later in the next meeting.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Motion adjourned.